It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Ann Strangchamps. What do you do when the headlines are freaking you out and the news is making you tense? A lot of people find sports takes their mind off things. It's like this one worry-free, politics-free zone. Right up until it isn't.
One of the beauties of the pandemic, one of the things that my son and I grabbed onto early on was the ritual of us going out running.
This is Kurt Streeter, a sports writer and a dad.
Just about every night we'd go for a mile or two, maybe 3 mile jog, and my son's a little 9-year-old just getting used to running, and he just loves it. And it was our time really to bond during this terrible time starting in March. Right around that time, I heard of the terrible shooting of Ahmaud Arbery down in Georgia.
Shot and killed white male.
Out for his daily job.
Mostly white neighborhood.
The killing of a black jogger by a pair of white men.
Chased down and killed.
Hunted down like an animal.
At the time, no charges were filed.
My son didn't know about it. I kept that news from him, and my wife and I kept it from him, but it hit me. It hit me really hard. I wrote an essay then about the first jog that my son Ash and I had right after that killing. We happen to live in Seattle, which is a very white city, one of the whitest cities in America. I'm probably the only black homeowner, I think, for a couple of square miles. It's a pretty liberal neighborhood right now, but it does have a tangled past. I know about its past because I grew up in Seattle, and this was one of the neighborhoods where I would always be very wary of going when I was a young man. You know, this was a neighborhood where I had to be ready to fight, and that was because of race. So there's a neighborhood near us that's a fair amount more exclusive than the one that we live in, but that neighborhood is my son's favorite neighborhood to jog in. It's really scenic, it's beautiful, it's very quiet. It also makes me a little bit jumpy, I think, because I know about its exclusionary practices from the past. So the essay that I wrote was really, it started out with my son and I beginning our run and him saying that he wanted to go on the route. And me just turning to him and saying, you know, son, not today. We're not going to go there today. I couldn't bear it mentally and emotionally that day to go through that neighborhood. There was just too much going on in my head and too many emotions. So we continued on in the route through our neighborhood. Even then, I have to worry still, and I constantly am worrying and checking myself, and are people seeing me as a prowler?
Attack on the black jogger.
She did call me the N-word.
White woman calling the police.
African American man threatening my life.
I happen to really like looking at houses because I like design. But if I do that, what's somebody going to think? Are they going to think that I'm casing their place, and are they going to call the police?
Yeah.
Forced him into a patrol car.
Plus, I'm working out. You're bothering me.
All of these little things go through your head, and I've had a couple of instances where I've stopped to say a word or two to people on the street, and then I've seen their sort of shock at seeing me. You know, I'm 6'2", pretty big, broad-shouldered, athletic, you know, African-American man in this neighborhood. They can be a surprise to people, and sometimes you see a little bit of recoiling. So I had to dance around. I really didn't want to have him seeing that killing. I mean, shoot, I've covered gang killings in South LA, East Baltimore, but seeing that shooting, seeing Ahmaud Arbery and what happened to him, it just brought me to absolute tears, and it just laid me low, you know.
Kurt Streeter writes the Sports of the Times column for the New York Times. It's hard to remember. All that happened in March. Given all that we've gone through, all we're still going through, it seems like a decade ago. Sports, politics, and race have converged at other iconic moments in history. When Jesse Owens competed in the 1936 Olympics in Nazi Germany. When Jackie Robinson became the first black player in the major leagues. When Muhammad Ali refused to serve in the Vietnam War. All of which has made Steve Paulson wonder.
When historians write about this year in sports, what do you think they will write about?
I think that they'll write about a period when there was a new reckoning, where athletes finally found their footing and found their power and began speaking out, really in ways I think that have never occurred. I mean, the way that NBA being involved, the NFL.
Let's walk through some of that. So the NBA, during the playoffs, you know, there's weird playoff time in the bubble in Disney World in Orlando, all the NBA teams there, and the Milwaukee Bucks, my home team, boycotted a playoff game in response to the protesting the shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Was that a big deal? Was that historic?
I absolutely believe it was. And you have a team, the Milwaukee Bucks, taking a stand like they did, and then the cascading effects where the entire league then decides, hey, we're not going to play. We are more than entertainers. We're human beings. We are connected to our communities. We're simply not going to take it anymore. And then the NBA stops playing for a while. It was unclear whether they were even going to come back, but they showed their power there in a way that had never been done for an entire league to stop playing, unprecedented.
And what I found striking about this, the league supported them. If this happened in football and the NFL, I'm not at all sure that the NFL would have supported players going on strike.
Yeah, the NBA and the NFL are just totally different beasts in the way that the way that ownership and particularly the commissioner's office deals with players and teams. And the NBA has become much more of a partnership between players and the league. And particularly the commissioner, Adam Silver, of the NBA seems to, you know, just have a very enlightened touch. So there's a great deal of trust there. And he gets it. He gets that this is a league that's 70% black. He has to understand and have empathy for the players.
So why is football so different?
You know, in all sports, the NFL is the kingpin, right? It's the biggest, baddest sport, and it's the most popular sport in America still. And there's just so much stereotyped imagery around football and machismo and really kind of, I got to say, sort of white America, you know, the white quarterback, the cowboy, literally. America's team is the Cowboys. And the players are much more kind of have to toe the line. The Colin Kaepernick situation and Black Lives Matter was handled. I mean, they completely shut that down.
Colin Kaepernick was, I mean, he's essentially been blacklisted in the NFL. He'll probably never play again because no team wants to take the risk of signing him again. I'm not sure that would happen in any other sport.
Exactly. And you see what you saw this year was the NFL then conveniently after George Floyd getting on the Black Lives Matter bandwagon for a while. And yet, conveniently, Colin Kaepernick always excluded. They don't even mention him. They don't even bring his name up. He's still able to play, most likely better than many of the quarterbacks in the NFL. And he's absolutely sidelined. He's just been banned from the league. The league would rather that he not exist. And they're just trying to erase him. But as far as Colin Kaepernick, the activist, they're actually making him more powerful, I think, in doing that. There's a power in that silence.
Yeah. But as you say, at least in the NBA and some other sports, black athletes do have more power now, more power than probably they've ever had in history. And I guess something has changed, right? Why is it different now than it was even a few years ago?
Well, you know, you have some really dynamic leaders. First of all, you've got LeBron James, and you've got people like Chris Paul in the NBA, and you've just got a whole generation of really astute star players who really get this. They're also wealthy beyond anything that their predecessors could have imagined, right? So they can speak up and not worry about their careers being cut short. They've made plenty of money. You know, they just feel more empowered.
Now, the other big thing, of course, that's had a huge impact on sports has been the lockdown. All the sports, professional, amateur, youth sports, shut down for months. And of course, they've sort of come back. Most of them have, at least. And I guess I'm wondering, If we learned anything about sports during that time, you are not only a sports columnist, you're a sports fan. Did you miss sports? Did it feel like actually we were missing something important during that time?
I think when anything is taken away from you like it was, and you sort of realize how much you took it for granted, the beauty and the joy that we get from sports, how much we want it, how much we crave it. But at the same time, I think like a lot of people, there's also a part of me, a big part of me, that feels guilty for this and feels like, man, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. We're in the middle of this terrible period right now.
I'm wondering if actually what mattered more, I mean, the bigger loss, I'm wondering if that was at the level of youth sports. All of those kids who really needed this outlet. Sports was one organized activity that really worked. All that was shut down for a long time.
You know, I've written about this a couple of times recently in Minneapolis, North Minneapolis High School, and their coach, Charles Adams, who is also a police officer. He's an African-American police officer. And North Minneapolis is really struggling with an uptick in violence and a sense among the kids of where do I go? What do I do? Everything's shut down. School is shut down. Community centers. What do I do? So Coach Adams' response is, we have to have football. We have got to have this place where these kids can be seen, can be heard, can be watched over, can feel a sense of community at least for a couple of hours a day. This has become a way for them really, honestly, to be safe. I live extremely cautiously through this, and I really believe that I'm skeptical about whether we should be playing sports right now just because of the ability to spread the virus.
Yeah.
We're taking an awful risk. But then again, we're sort of used to that in a way. If you're, you know, if you've been paying attention, let's say you're a football fan and you've been aware in the last several years of brain trauma issues in football, this is an extra layer. And this just speaks to the complications sometimes of all the time, really, in watching sports these days. There's always something that sort of makes it a little bit complicated that you kind of have to grapple with, a bit of a love-hate thing.
Yeah. Now, Kurt, you've mentioned that you're an athlete yourself. I mean, you were quite a serious tennis player earlier, a nationally ranked captain of the UC Berkeley tennis team. In fact, from what I read, the first black captain in a predominantly white sport.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that one of the reasons you took up tennis was because you admired one of the great pioneers in tennis history, Arthur Ashe, one of the very few black players on the circuit in his time. What was it about Arthur Ashe that you found so inspiring?
Well, I think, you know, I got captured by Arthur Ashe and the love for Arthur Ashe when I was 9, 10 years old in 1975 when he won Wimbledon and beat Jimmy Connors in four sets. I remember watching that match, and I can just clear as day remember him coming out in his USA jacket and his just cool afro and his cool demeanor, and just thinking, wow, I want to be like that guy. And I never let go. One of the great moments of my life was when I was 16, 17 years old, and I'm, you know, sitting in my room one night, and I get a knock on the door from my mom, and I find out that Arthur Ashe was calling me, of all
wow.
things. All those years later, Arthur yeah. Ashe, like he did for many, many young African-American, sort of national-ranked level tennis players, he reached down, and that night, he was calling me to tell me that he was helping to fund me to be able to go down to the Nick Bollettieri Tennis Academy, which is a famous tennis factory for junior players.
Sure.
I mean, it was just kind of the craziest thing and the luckiest thing in the world that my idol is literally just calling me one night. Again, I'm hardly the only one. Hardly the only
yeah.
one. He did yeah. that a lot and with really no fanfare.
And you said that your son is named Ash, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Little Ash. I hope Arthur is proud from above.
Yeah.
And again, it's mostly just the humanitarian aspect and just the way he walked through the world is something that I just deeply admire and hope that I can kind of, you know, tap into a bit and hope that I can pass on to my son.
Kurt Streeter writes the Sports of the Times column for the New York Times.